Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome, one and all, to episode 433 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and for this episode, we welcome back Wolftooth. This time around, we have Chris Sullivan, Terry McDaniel, and Jeff Cole of the band to talk to us about their latest album, Wizard's Light. It's out right now on Ripple Music. Check it out. It is well worth it.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see Work With Me, hover over that, and you'll see Podcast Services and Sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. Folks, it is almost the end of the year. We will be doing our 2025 countdown shortly, asking people to vote. Send your 10 favorite albums of 2025, hard rock or metal or anything that's remotely close to either or. Send it to Signals from Mars at Signals from Mars and make sure that your voice is heard. You could also join us in the chat while we do the show live. We are going to have a great time discussing some great music that's come out. Jeremy Weltman and Ed Ferguson will be recording the last episode for the album reviews for the year. So we're going to be doing October, November tonight. That will be episode 434. And for anyone that hasn't checked out enough new music or feels that there's any good music available now, I would recommend that you go to the bottom of signalsfrommars.com and you will find all of the monthly reviews that we've done throughout this year to help you prime for this. check out our albums of the month that each one of us has selected and check those albums out. See if there's anything there that really interests you. Also, if there's anything that really interests you and you're going to play a lot, go out and support the bands. Go to Bandcamp, buy the digital version or a vinyl or what have you. I purchased Wizard's Light off of Bandcamp. It was Bandcamp Friday, and I really like the album. I like a lot of what the band has put out over the years, and that's why I wanted to bring the band back to discuss the album. And it was a fun chat. I was only expecting Chris and also got Terry and Jeff as well. So that's awesome. Also, I had to switch up some of my questions on the fly, but no problem. I think we had a great time. At least I had a great time talking to them. Also, remember that the video version is up on YouTube. It's up on Facebook for another few weeks. It's on Twitch as well. But YouTube is the one place where it will kind of live in infamy. Want to send a quick shout out to all of my patrons. Want to give you guys a big thank you for the support. If you want to appear on any of these shows that we vote on, not only the best of 2025 or any of the countdowns that we do next year with regards to specific years or specific genres or whatnot, you need to be a patron. You can do so for as little as $2 a month. Go to signalsfrommars.com and find out all about all the great ways that you can support us, Patreon, merch, so on and so forth. Anyway, let's get on with the interview. Welcome one and all to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I am joined today by the members of Wolftooth. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. Can you introduce yourselves?
I'm Chris Sullivan, guitar and vocals.
I'm Jeff Cole, guitar.
I'm Terry, bass.
Awesome. So I'm glad you guys are here today, tonight, for me. This is, as we just talked about offline for a second, this is the second time that Chris is on the show, at least. And it's cool because I've been listening to the album Wizard's Light, which just came out on Ripple. And the previous album had come out on Napalm. And it was kind of surprising to me because at the time, Napalm had kind of assembled a really cool roster of diverse different bands. And I was surprised that not only you guys, but other bands that were on the roster are no longer there. It seemed like they were building up something cool and it just kind of stopped. What ended up happening with Napalm for you guys, and why is Ripple the perfect fit?
I don't think anything really happened with Napalm. It was just, I think for a band like us, we were kind of like a really small fish in a gigantic pond, you know? And I think we were kind of a passion project for A&R guy. Like, he really dug us a lot, you know? And they did a lot for us, there's a lot of gears and machinery when you're dealing with a label like Napalm. But the end of it, we just felt more comfortable on a label like Ripple, you know? So that's why we went back. And it was kind of this, you know, Napalm's kind of this juggernaut that, you know, like, we're not, I don't know. I thought the album did well. We were super happy with how they promoted it and everything. Everything went good. It was just, Ripple just seemed like a better fit for us.
Okay. was something you guys were more comfortable with as opposed to just working with a big label. So they're more personable with you guys, more hands-on maybe than what an APOM is?
Yeah, pretty much. Napalm's just, you know, they've got a lot of bigger bands, and a band like us, I think, was just, I'm not sure they really, maybe they didn't know how to market us, or because a lot of the bands they have are quite a bit different than us. And so it'd be hard to put a band like us on, say, a tour with one of their bigger bands or one of their more well-known bands than us, just because we are so different from them. So I'm assuming that maybe marketing was a little bit of new to them as far as trying to market this kind of music or this genre of music. Ripple's definitely more on our speed, I think.
Okay. Cool. A lot of what inspires doom metal bands, stoner rock bands, was Sabbath. Obviously, we lost Ozzy over the summer. What, in your opinion, is the most important thing that you can extract from Ozzy, from Sabbath, when it comes to Wolftooth?
Well, I mean, their songwriting, definitely. Their structures have a big play in the way we write. The riffs, you know, Tony Iommi's riffs are classic, timeless, and that plays a big part in the way that we write. And just, I mean, just their overall sound. And, you know, we grew up with Sabbath and Ozzy and, you know, Deep Purple and a lot of other Thin Lizzy and a lot of other things like that. And I mean, Sabbath definitely was and is a big part of who we are. But we don't, you know, we don't try to, I mean, they're a big part of every doom metal band. They're part of every, in my opinion, every stoner rock band. They're a part of a lot of rock bands. It's, you know, they're not just one. I never saw Sabbath as just doom. I mean, I saw rock and roll and heavy metal, and especially when Dio got into the mix. That's just my opinion on it.
You know, once you listen to bands for as long as we have, say, well, we've been listening to Black Sabbath for what, 30 years or so, yeah. It kind of just gets in you, as you know, and you don't realize it until you're playing this type of music. So it's, you know, it kind of just comes to you.
Okay. And between Blood and Iron and Wizard's Light, you guys released a cover of Kiss's 100,000 Years. For years, I've fought with quote unquote traditional doom metal musicians and other hosts and whatnot, saying the importance of those first two Kiss albums when it comes to stoner rock, when it comes to doom metal and stuff like that. So to see that you guys actually covered 100,000 Years, it was almost like, wow, somebody's listening to what I've been trying to sell all these years. How important are those two albums, Hotter Than Hell and that self-titled album, when it comes to the whole genre?
For me, they're pivotal just because, you know, I remember being a kid listening to God of Thunder and some stuff that was coming out of my brother's 6 years older than me. So he, of course, had all the stuff on vinyl. And I remember hearing, Doom to me, their first two albums were more Doom to me. But, you know, the funny thing is like, from the very beginning, when we put out our first EP, immediately people said we were Doom. And honestly, I've never considered us to be a Doom metal band. I just considered us to be a metal band. I mean, yeah, we have Doom elements in our music for sure. We also have a lot of new wave British heavy metal. We have traditional metal. We have lots of different things in our music that kind of stand out more to me than the Doom parts do. But as far as the first two Kiss albums, I think they're very pivotal in the Doom scene.
Yeah, I think we had the Kiss influence has been there the whole time, but I think like the first time it kind of creeped out was for our song Firestarter on our second album, Valhalla.
Okay.
And so we've always, Chris, I have an older brother too, who got me on the Kiss. And, you know, I remember I was like 5 years old and had Kiss posters in my room, you know? So it's always been a big influence for us, for sure.
I think any band, Kiss, Black Sabbath, any band that's riff-centric, everything begins and ends with a riff for this band. And I think that's what ties us along with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I can... I understand where you guys are coming from because my brother's 6 years older than me. I'm lucky to inherit his copy of Destroyer and Alive 2, which are behind me. So I know exactly where you guys are coming from. So I was 4 years old, saw the inserts that came with Alive 2, and I was hooked. So,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
We also lost this year, too.
Yeah. Yeah, another huge loss in general. It's been a weird year for hard rock, heavy metal in general. We've lost a lot of giant players from Ozzy to Ace. You can look at John Sykes as well. There's a bunch of people that I'm missing also, but it sucks, you know. And as we get older, all those people that are so much older than us are going to be going. And you brought up Dio. I mean, that's already been how many years ago?
Yeah, right.
So it.
Yeah, I mean, Dio to me was just as pivotal of a part for Sabbath, maybe as Ozzy was. You know, I really, really enjoyed all of the Dio Black Sabbath stuff. And, you know, I know there's going to be purists to be like, oh, that's not me, or that's not Sabbath with him, but it's just, he's just as pivotal to me.
So imagine when I tell people that Dehumanizer is my second favorite album of all time and my favorite Sabbath album. As a drummer, I just love Vinnie Appice's drum sound on that album. It's just so heavy, so crushing. It goes along with the riffs, with Dio's singing. And
yeah,
to me, it's just as important. I know that for some people that's sacrilegious, but that's my opinion.
Not for us, it's not. We give all the singers that sang for Sabbath a chance. I mean, there's lots of good songs with the other singers too. I mean, Tony Martin, he had some great songs with them.
Yeah, agreed. I love all their airs as well.
I want to ask you a question before we end this. So leave time for me to ask you a question.
Okay. Does it have to do with should Chuck Schuldiner have sung on Control Denied?
What?
Should Chuck Schuldiner have sung on the Control Denied albums? Is that your question?
Well, I mean, the song, No, that's not the question, but
I saw you posted that on social media, so I wrote it down. I'm like, I'm going to bring it up, see what we can get out of this. So,
I mean, I loved Chuck's voice. I know he hated it at the last there. He hated having to sing on those albums, but I loved his voice. That's one of the things that made me fall in love with Death.
Yeah.
And I would really love to have heard that album with his voice on it. I mean, the singer did a great job, you know, but, to me, it wasn't supposed to be Death. So, you know, I get it. But I still would have liked to have heard it with Chuck's voice.
Yeah, that's funny when you brought that up because it took me back to late 90s, early 2000s. My last job before moving to Europe, we were all a bunch of metalheads in this the one job that I had. And somebody brought in the demos for Control Denied. And at the time it was like, oh, this is never going to come out, so on and so forth. And he had a burned copy that he'd gotten, I don't know where. It sounded like shit, but we were all like in awe listening to it. So when it came out years later, officially, at least the first album, I had to pick it up. So
yeah. I mean, it's great. It's a really good album. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but to me, I just would have much rather have heard Chuck's voice on it, and you know, but that wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. Okay. So previous to Wizard's Light, it had taken you guys a year, 2 years more or less between albums, but between Blood and Iron and Wizard's Light, it took 4 years. Was that something that happened purposefully? Was it something that, again, you guys planned, or it just played out that way?
No, it wasn't something we planned purposefully. I mean, we've gone through a couple drummers, you know, and that kind of set us back. Casey Wainwright, the drummer that played on this album, he was with us for about 2 years, and he had to step away for health reasons. So, you know, we played with him for a while and felt a really good groove with him, and he had to step away. So then we tried out another drummer, and it just didn't work out. And now we have Shane Shook that we've all known for years and played in different bands with him. And he's in the band now, and he's working out really well. But it was not a plan for us to take an eternity to put another album out.
Okay. And during that time, do you feel that you had more time to maybe work on some of these songs than what you maybe previously had, or was everything already done? It was just sorting out the drummers.
No, I mean, our original drummer, Johnny, helped us pretty much write 5 of those 9 songs. We got Casey in the band, who was no longer on Napalm, so we said, you know, well, let's write an album. So Casey had time to come in, and he pretty much stayed true to everything Johnny did for those first 5 songs. And we were under no pressure, no time limit. So, you know, that's the way that went.
Yeah, Blood and Iron, we had deadlines, and we don't work very well on deadlines, it doesn't seem. So having the extra time to write Wizard's Light was nice. We kind of wish it wouldn't have taken as long as it did. But saying that, a lot of people have told us that they think that this is our best album. So maybe the extra time was worth it.
Okay. It definitely sounds like, sonically, I think the album probably sounds the best out of all of the albums, in the sense that, and not to say that the other album sounded bad, it just seems like every instrument, the vocals are each in their own kind of lane, and you can really hear everything. Where with like Blood and Iron, maybe it was a little bit more bottom end heavy than this album is. It seems like the bottom end is there, but it seems like everything is on the same level this time around. Do you feel that's a fair assessment?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the production on this one turned out great. And I think it's cool, too, that like each album kind of sounds a little different, you know, from each other. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The other cool thing is, with you guys being told that it's your best album, I think it's a real easy album to listen to, in the sense that you start listening to the first track and before you know it, the album's done. I mean, there are so many albums now that you put on and you're like, shit, didn't I hear this song already? Wasn't that like the 3rd song? No, I'm on song 7. The same album isn't over yet. You know, whereas with this album, everything really like flows. I really like a lot of the melodies that you guys incorporated in the album. And it's interesting, Chris, that you brought up that you have elements of doom, because I mean, everyone wants to say, no, they're, from everything that I've seen online, they're a doom band, but there's so many other elements in there. And especially with your vocals, I think if you listen to a classic doom band, they don't they don't incorporate the same types of melodies that you guys do in the songs, or the same kind of intricate writing with the music behind it to go along with those melodies.
Yeah, I don't. When we were playing with Casey, Casey would always tell me that he thought that I was a drummer in a guitar player's body. He was like, "We what you write on guitar totally transfers to drums." And I didn't understand it at the time, but what Casey didn't know was when I was younger, I started out playing drums. So I switched, and then I went to bass, and then I gradually went over to guitar. So I get where he's coming from, but I think maybe that helps me come up with different styles of melodies that maybe other doom singers don't come up with. I really don't know. I just kind of, whatever I think sounds good with this, what I put with it.
Yeah. And that makes sense, because if you're coming from a drumming standpoint, you're going to be more rhythmic with what you're doing. There are a lot of players that I've come across where they don't have that same connection, because I don't know, maybe arrogance, maybe no time to learn, you know, the bottom end of things, you know. I think that's super important. It's kind of like learning different positions in sports, knowing what the other guy's doing, so that if you need to fill in, you know, you're there.
The funny thing is that I've interviews in the past that we've done, I've always told everybody I didn't write any lyrics or sing any vocals until we record. And most people say that's odd. That's just the way I've always done it. We always write the music first, and then I always add the lyrics later. These guys don't even have a clue what the lyrics or music or vocals are going to sound like until we record the album.
A lot of classic bands do that. I mean, if you look back, you watch documentaries of bands from the 70s or 80s, they all talk about doing that. We're almost, unless the vocalist is a musician himself, they really don't work on the lyrics until that last stage. So that's,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of going back to what bands used to do. It seems like a lot more bands have turned to, all right, well, I have this lyric and let's build something around it. And maybe that lends itself to the era that we're in, where people are just cutting and pasting stuff as opposed to just jamming stuff out and fleshing out a song like that.
Well, I used to write when we were in other bands, I used to write and worry about what I was going to sing. Am I going to be able to sing and play this at the same time? And now with this band, I've never done that. I've always written the lyric or written the riffs first. We've put them together, and then I put the words to it. And then I don't worry about playing and singing them until comes time to do it. So I think that's what's helped me the most on all of these albums, come up with the melodies that I've been able to come up with, is just not really worrying about it if I can play and sing them.
Okay. Going into recording the album, was there anything that you guys had set as a goal? Did you want the album to sound a certain way? Did you want to try certain things you hadn't done in the past? Or you guys just went in and it kind of, you know, flowed with whatever came out?
I think as far as the sound goes, of the recording, I think we were kind of shooting towards more production, like on our second album, Valhalla. That album was like super crisp, right? And clean, but we wanted to get that, but bigger, you know? So I think like we kind of, you know, we brought a little bit more boominess in the kick drum on top of the pop. And then Terry's bass tone had a lot to do with that too, filling that out. So we had this kind of wide bass to insert the guitars into, and every instrument had its set in place. So when Chris sang on top of it, everything's nice and separated and worked out really well.
Our main goal was not to screw the drums up. Because that was the biggest complaint that we had on Blood and Iron. And, you know, it was our own fault. We did it. And we kind of screwed Johnny on that. And we wanted to make sure that that didn't happen again. Because that was the main complaint on most people's critiques of the album, was that the drums were too low or, you know, whatever. So we wanted to make sure that the drums were very well heard on this album. And I think they are. And I think Jeremy did a really good job of mixing all of it to make sure that it all was legible, I guess.
Yeah, we all don't come into the studio mixing time. Jeremy usually does it on his own, and then he'll send it to us, and we'll send our critiques back to him, and he'll adjust accordingly. But at the beginning, I thought the bass and the drums was a little bit too hot.
Okay.
That's just my opinion of it. But when I heard everything together, yeah, it was right on.
So you thought your own playing was too loud. So that's interesting.
Yeah, at first, because I just wasn't used to hearing it that way. If you go back and listen to the prior three albums, the bass does not stand out as much as this new.
Absolutely. It's more...
I'm not going to complain about it.
I like it like that. I would turn Terry's bass up even more if he would allow it. Because, I mean, some of his bass lines are amazing. And I, you know, to get muffled underneath the drums and guitars, to me, I'd rather be on top.
Okay. Gear wise, was there any different type of gear you guys used when recording this album? And how does your gear in the studio vary from when you go out and you play live?
Drum wise, it was real drums. 95% of it was real drums.
Yeah, he didn't use any triggers or anything like that on the drums on this album, which I think helped a lot. And what you're hearing is what was played, pretty much.
The natural sound of his drums in that room is what you got.
Okay.
Yeah. And for you, pretty much played direct in, right?
I did use preamps and direct in, but Jeremy actually made my pedal for my sound live. So it's pretty much, you know, it's close as it can be from live sound here to on the album.
Yeah, our amps that we recorded with are pretty much the exact same thing that we use live.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's orange, you know, it's like orange heads and 412s. So like Rocket Verbs, and you use like an 8030. And, you know, like for some lead stuff, like a little Marshall combo, just on some, not all of them, but some, most of it was orange and Marshall, and maybe did one with a Morgan,
yeah,
something like that.
We kept it pretty simple as far as guitars and amps go. But yeah, I mean, pretty much what you hear on the album is it's going to sound real close to that live.
Okay. As far as guitars and bass, what are your go-tos?
Oh, I play ESP Limited Vipers. That's pretty much all I play.
Okay.
Yeah, the two that are on the record and I play live, I've got a PRS Standard 22 and also a PRS single cut. And they got like top riding pickups and, you know, but that's pretty much, those are my two main guitars.
Yeah, bass, I play a Fender Jazz. It's just loaded up with nasty AMG pickups. Where I get that distortion from.
Okay. Cool. If you guys had a chance to go out on a bill, it would be the Wolftooth bill, where you guys would headline, you guys would have a band that's currently around and one that no longer exists play beneath you guys. Who would those two bands be?
All right. Well, in the bands that we have played beneath us, be bigger than us.
Absolutely. This is your dream.
Yeah. Because, it'd be weird to have a big band open up for us. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we played with Corrosion before me and we really enjoyed that. We played with Crowbar and we really enjoyed that.
Spirit of Drift.
Spirit of Drift. I love Spirit of Drift. I think they're great. They would probably be on the bill for the newer band. And for me, I mean,
it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, a band that doesn't exist anymore. Thin Lizzy or Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath probably be in the top three. Iron Maiden's still around. So I would say one of those three for me anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right. That works. To pick up Wizard's Light, what's the best way for somebody to purchase a physical copy of it and get the most amount of money back in the band's pocket?
Bandcamp.
Yeah, wolftoothbandcamp.com.
Yeah, and tomorrow is Bandcamp Friday. Okay. So tomorrow will be a good day to get it. But yeah, Bandcamp, our Bandcamp on wolftooth.bandcamp.com, and also you can pick up a copy at Ripple Music, their Big Cartel, and their Bandcamp as well.
The funny thing, too, is, oddly enough, I was talking to our A&R guy from Napalm the other day, and oddly enough, they're going to be carrying our new album, too. But we get more money if you buy through us.
Yeah. I
possibly can. There you go. Yeah, they have a... They have a pretty big store. I've gotten into a few arguments with them over the years about shipping and taxes and shit like that, but that's a conversation for another day.
Yeah.
Chris, what was your question for me?
Okay. So in your opinion, how is this going to happen? So Metallica is coming up on the end of their days, I would say, here in the next few years, guessing, but you know, Megadeth is on their last tour and album next year, and you know, their Iron Maiden is going to be coming to an end soon, Judas Priest is going to be coming into an end soon. So how do you see bands like us, or on our level, getting to that level when none of those bands are bringing out bands like us to showcase for newer people?
There's a lot of things that I think that have fallen by the wayside. There's definitely a culture that's been lost that existed in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where big bands took a risk, brought out bands like yours, brought out another kind of intermediate band, so that, you know, they kind of spread the wealth. Metallica still does it to an extent. Obviously, you know, they have, you know, they've had Pantera out and Nice Nine Kills, and then they've had like bands playing in the parking lot, like Overkill and Prong, I know, played back home for me in New Jersey, which is cool, but those are still all more or less established and veteran bands.
Established bands.
Yeah. And I answered something today for something that Rich Beato brought up about, you know, metal kind of losing its thunder and kids not being involved and stuff like that. I think part of the problem that exists, and this touches upon what you mentioned, is that a lot of these bigger shows are just way too expensive. Whereas when we grew up, you had $20 shows, you had $9 shows, where there were bands like yours that were going out with an Alice in Chains or a Soundgarden or a Pantera, and you got like a $20 bill where four bands were playing Plus, you had like 10 local bands on that same bill. You know, that doesn't exist anymore. Right. They're pricing a lot of the audience out. I'm lucky that my kids, who are, as of Monday, are both going to be teenagers, are into this style of music. But that's an anomaly. Most kids their age are into this shit that's on TikTok and the problem is that the music isn't accessible anymore. They can't afford to go to a show. If I want to take them to a show every time we visit the States, you know, every summer, I'm paying $400 to $500 for four people to go to a show. And that's without even talking about instruments. You know, the last guitar that I bought 14, 15 years ago, over here in Europe cost about $800. And Ibanez Destroyer. There's nothing that's remotely decent that costs less than $1,000, $1,500. And that's without getting to your Gibsons and your Fenders that are selling guitars for $3,000 to $6,000.
Yeah.
How are you going to get a kid to play, to learn to play a guitar or any instrument if you're pricing them out? They're just going to end up buying another smartphone, another video game console, because that's cheaper and it's going to grab their attention. It's going to grab more people's attention just because of the economic factor. So if we go back a few decades, an audience like yours should be how many years younger, theoretically? You know, the people that are supposed to support you. If you look at the bands, all the bands that you mentioned, most of those guys are 15 to 20 years older than me. You know, and I'm in my early 50s. If you look at any of the waves of music that have come along, all the fans are at least 10 years younger than the people that are playing on stage. So if those people are no longer being connected, that's, to me, that's the biggest disconnect out of everything. And that's not allowing, when you're pricing the youth out of it, that's affecting bands like yours to go out to make a living off of this, because you don't have the same amount of people to draw from. The argument that, well, you know, with the internet and streaming and that, yeah, I think streaming and all these platforms should pay you guys more, without a doubt. At the same time, your audience is right there, you know, which is a tool that people didn't have all those years ago, for better, for worse. I don't know. Maybe that's a long-winded response.
But what metal bands are going to be filling arenas like Metallica does, or Judas Priest, or Iron Maiden? What metal bands are going to be coming up filling that void?
They're not.
And I hate to say this, but it's sad for me to think that maybe the only band that can do that someday might be Ghost or something like that. And it's, if that's what we have to look forward to, I'm not saying Ghost is bad or anything, but
Slipknot.
I mean, Slipknot, yeah, but Slipknot's even getting older.
Slipknot's been around for 30 years.
Yeah, it just seems like there's not ever going to be another Metallica. There's never going to be another Judas Priest. There's never going to be another Iron Maiden to fill those shoes. To me, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like maybe metal's being pushed back underground somewhat.
Yeah, I think, and I've said this for a while, unfortunately, you know, you look at blues, you look at jazz, you look at any other wave that came before FM radio or MTV or stuff like that. It's not dissimilar to what's going on now. You know, a lot of people are complaining about, oh, well, there's only one original member left, or there's no original members left. What happened to the Temptations? What happened to the Spinners and all these bands from the 60s? It's the same exact thing. And a lot of them ended up, you know, as a kid, I ended up seeing one of the Supremes at, you know, local football field singing a few Supreme songs for July 4th. you know? And it's unfortunate, but I think a good amount of metal is going to be trending that way. I think we'll always have the underground that'll be in our favor, but yeah. That commercial success that a Metallica had, or a Priest, or a Maiden, it's difficult to envision there being anyone else, even beyond Ghost, because you guys are saying Slipknot, Lamb of God, for example, Killswitch Engage, these bands, they've all been around since the 90s.
Yeah,
right.
You know, so they're not new. Ghost at this point in time, they've been around for like 15 years also. I saw them on their first tour playing at 3 p.m. in the afternoon at a festival, sweating their asses off with all the makeup on and all the masks and all that shit. So,
yeah.
And that was 2010, I think it was. So it's hard. It sucks. And you know, I'm hoping that there is something that we haven't seen that's coming, that's going to continue what we love going, you know. I do a monthly show where we talk nothing but new music all the time, new music, new yeah. bands from bands that we all know that are coming out with new material. Because I think that's super important to keep everything going. You know, there's always good new music yeah. coming out. You just have to search it out. You know, unfortunately it's not in our face like it was before, but it's there. If you look for it, your album is a perfect example of that. So if nothing else, I hope that this interview, you know, helps push people in your direction and helps people pick it up, or, you know, check you guys out. At least they have the streaming platforms there to check the album out. If they like it, I encourage them to buy it, which is what I do. If I hear something and I like it, I buy it, because,
you know, it's funny. We just noticed that, or Terry was saying the other day, that our Spotify numbers have doubled.
Oh, wow.
We're
up to almost 10,000.
Yeah, we've never been over 4,000 monthly listeners. Now we're almost 10,000.
Oh, wow.
Just since that came out, what, 3 weeks, yeah. 2 weeks? So that's pretty awesome to think that many different people have listened, you know, picked us up or started listening to us just through this album.
And that's awesome. You know, that's one of those things where it doesn't matter when somebody hops on the train, as long as they do, you know?
Right. Exactly.
And I think, again, I think that the album is well worth people's listen. And I hope that's the reason why. Actually, the reason doesn't matter, as long as they're listening to you guys.
Yeah. Well, appreciate it.
Yeah. Where should people go to keep up with you guys?
Just on our Facebook, Instagram, we post everything on there.
Yeah, we'll tweet Facebook. It's pretty easy to find.
We try to keep constant on those, at least, you know, just try to keep people involved in it still, and try not to lose people, because it is very easy for people to lose attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Guys, I want to thank you for your time. And as you guys said, when this interview comes out, which will be the first Friday of December 2025, go to Bandcamp, pick the album up. And even if you check the interview out later, go to Bandcamp and pick the album up. Guys, I appreciate your time, and wish you guys nothing but luck.
Thanks for your time.
All right, guys. And thanks for accommodating me with the time as well. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
How are you?
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.